Welcome to the Grace Fellowship Church of Ephrata podcast. Our desire is to help you grow in your journey with Jesus, no matter where you are. For more information, please check out our website at www.gfchurch.net.
Question for you. Have you ever seen a parent overindulge their kids? Have you ever seen a parent overindulge their kids and thought to yourself, maybe whispered to somebody, what's really going on there? Joan Crawford. Any of you familiar with Joan Crawford, the old actress? Yeah. Silver Screen? Yeah. I'm a man of many tastes. I watch old movies, okay? I know Joan Crawford. Joan Crawford was a parent that a lot of people were suspicious about what was really going on. Joan, you know, had this perfect persona in her movies, perfect persona in the press, and adopted four children, gave them all C names, which immediately, those of you that, you know, have children and you name them all with the first letter, the same first letter, God bless you, because my parents did it. My dad still gets my names wrong, okay? He called me Deb once. I will let you know that, my sister. So anyway, with that, Joan named them all with C names and so on. And one of those children eventually came out with a story after Joan Crawford had passed in a book called Mommy Dearest. And apparently, there was more than met the eye. See, Joan would throw birthday parties for her kids, and these birthday parties were extravagant, and she'd rent out hotel rooms, fill them from the floor all the way up to the ceiling full of, like, the best toys, bicycles, you name it. And then she would conveniently ask the press to come in. And the press would take pictures and interview her, and oh, what a great mom. And the kids would enjoy it in front of the cameras. And then the press would leave. And she would give away the toys to charity. And in some cases, according to the daughter Christina, would destroy them in front of them. There was a power that she wanted over these children that not a lot of people knew was actually going on behind the scenes. She overindulged her kids. But there was a broken home behind it. Now, Joan Crawford was a certain generation before my time. So for those fellow Gen Xers, let's talk about the Spelling family. Tori Spelling. Candy, her mother. Their father, Aaron, produced a ton of TV shows, even in the 70s and the 80s. You remember The Love Boat? I won't sing it this morning because some of you will just walk out. But anyway, The Love Boat, he produced one, Seventh Heaven, and all these just wildly popular TV shows. He was always too busy to be at home. So you would think, okay, well, Candy, the mom, will compensate for this. And so Candy would do things such as have a Christmas party for the kids, and she would literally pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get real snow shipped into LA for these parties. She would get them extravagant birthday gifts as well. She would throw extravagant parties for the kids. And Tori was one who came out later on, and just in the case, same case as Joan Crawford, said, yeah, it was a distant relationship at best. There was no real loving, you know, the press made it look like it was a perfect home. And yet it was not. It was anything but. It seemed that Aaron and Candy had a great time producing their own TV show where everything looked perfect. But behind the scenes, there was brokenness and hurt. It's interesting when you see a parent do this because they will overcompensate their kids, buy them all these gifts, put on this persona, and they do it not for the kids. Who are they doing it for? Some would say themselves. I think that's true. Who else? Everybody else. So that we have this assumption as, wow, they really have it together. What a great, you know, person they are, that they are just loving these kids. And in the case of Joan Crawford, she adopted four kids. How amazing is that? By the way, Joan Crawford, when she passed away, in her will, her two oldest children, including the one who wrote the book and the son, Christopher, she said that they get nothing. for, quote-unquote, reasons that they know why. She leaves him with nothing. But it looked great. They were doing it for themselves. They were not doing it for the children. They had no relationship with the children, but they were also doing it for public image. They wanted to look good, and so they made things look good by buying everything that all of us would maybe have wanted when we were children. Unfortunately, I'll say that you see this in Christian circles as well. You see believers sometimes distracting from shortcomings in their life spiritually by doing like one big, bold spiritual thing. You know, go on a missions trip. Yeah, look at me. You know, they're taking selfies on mission trips. Look at me. I'm feeding the poor. Look at me. And this is one thing. If you ever go on a mission trip and I'm a part of it, that I've told our teams, don't post pictures of yourself doing the work of the Lord, because that can come across sometimes as you're trying to do this phrase that came out in the late 90s. You're trying to wag the dog. Wag the dog means there's this small thing, the tail, that's distracting from the body of the dog. You're trying to put on this real big spiritual feat. Look at me, I'm super spiritual. I did it. I walked an altar. I raised a hand. I went on a missions trip. I gave a big check. And you're doing it knowing that deep down inside you really don't have that close of a relationship with God. You're wagging the dog. You're distracting from the big problem. And this is what brings us today to our study on the Pharisees these few weeks. Last week, we looked at the Pharisees and we saw that the one defining attribute for them, one of them, was self-righteousness. And we talked all about how self-righteousness in the life of a Christian, a very seasoned Christian, can just easily seep in when we begin to look down on others in the church as though we have it all together and they do not. We began to look down on their sin. We have a problem with self-righteousness. Today, we're going to look at the second attribute. And this attribute is one of being a pretender. Because the Pharisees were great at playing pretend. They were good at putting on these visuals that blew people away, but they distracted from a vacancy in their life, and that was a true saving relationship with God. They may not even have known it. They may have thought they were doing the right thing, but they were wrong. We're going to look at a pretty lengthy passage today. Matthew chapter 6. We're going to look at the first six verses, and then we're also going to look at verse 16 to 18 because I need to highlight a reason why we're going past this one section of it. I'll talk about why. I want to focus primarily in this teaching of Jesus. This is in the Sermon on the Mount, one of Jesus' most famous sermons and well-recorded, we see in the book of Matthew. He's highlighting how we should be living our life all throughout the Sermon on the Mount. And when we get to verse 1 of chapter 6, he says this: "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be" what? Be careful to not practice your faith in front of people to be seen by them. Yeah, people are looking at you. Now, I want to pause here before we move on. Some people say, that's weird, because the chapter before, he says, we are supposed to be the what of the world? Light of the world. We're supposed to be seen. I think there's an answer to this, because it's all about heart motivation and reality, the relationship we genuinely have with God. If we have a genuine relationship with God, we talked about that last week, it will come out. It can't be hidden. We don't have to force it. We don't have to draw attention to ourselves. But in this case, this practicing gives us the idea of hypocrisy. You're making yourself look like something you're not. He goes on and says this. Jesus says, "For then, if you do that, if you're going to practice it so people will see you, you're going to have no reward from your Father who is in heaven." He goes on. He says, "Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say, they've received their reward." Now, hypocrites here, real quick. Hypocrite is the word for an actor. And this is used all throughout the Greek language. It's the idea of a person who's putting on a front for their stage. And in the case of the Pharisees, their stage was the world. They wanted to put on a show to show what a religious person, a faithful, righteous person looked like. And Jesus says this word hypocrites here. Now you may say, well, it doesn't say Pharisees. In the book of Matthew, it was frequent that he used the word hypocrite and Pharisee interchangeably. And everybody that was there knew who he was talking about. So he says, when you give to the poor, don't go blowing some trumpet to get attention. If so, great, you got your reward. You got the applause of people, and they're like, wow, you're really noble. He goes on to the next verse. He says, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Verse 5, he goes on and says, and when you pray, you must not be like, once again, the hypocrites, the Pharisees, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, that they may be what? Seen again. There we go. You're picking up a pattern here? Seen by others. Truly I say to you, they've received their reward. Once again, you wanted accolades, you wanted praise, you got it. Good job for you. Aren't that so wonderful? But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. If you skip down to 16 and 18, because he talks about the Gentiles in this passage here and goes into the Lord's Prayer about how to pray, but I'm going to skip down to 16 and 18 because it stays with the hypocrites in this passage. And when you fast, do not look gloomy like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces, that their fasting may be seen by others. Truly I say to you, they've received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you. Now, three different disciplines Jesus just talked about. What were they? What was the first one? Giving. Yep, giving to the needy or giving. What was the second? Prayer. So praying. What was the third? Fasting. Okay. These three were disciplines that would have been well known in Judaism. They'd been around for hundreds of years that the Jews would practice these. So it was very common. They knew these three disciplines, and most of them, if not all of them, were supposed to be doing these or were doing these in their personal spiritual life. So Jesus highlights three no-brainers right here. And he says that these hypocrites were ones who were using these spiritual disciplines as a way to put on a facade, to wow people so that they would be seen. It's interesting in this passage that Jesus starts and says, he basically spells out, here's who this story is for. This is for people that want to act out the righteousness so people will see them. He says that because if you remember last week in Luke's passage, he did sort of the same thing with the parable. He spelled out, here's who this was directed to. Jesus is very clear who he's talking about. The people that put on a show for us to believe. Now, hypocrites were known to be in Phariseeism. But here's the thing. I want you to catch this. Many of us would say, well, yes, that was rampant in Phariseeism. All Pharisees were hypocrites, and they didn't care. And I would say, you're wrong. And here's why. The Pharisees knew that they were prone to hypocrisy. All the way back in the rabbinical law, the book called the Talmud, they actually spelled out seven different types of hypocrites to encourage Pharisees and the Jews to avoid becoming. There was the shoulder Pharisee. This is the one that I think Jesus was most speaking to in this passage. The shoulder Pharisee wears all his good deeds on his shoulder so everyone can see it. You liked what I did there, didn't you, huh? I'm a pretty good guy, okay? That's the shoulder Pharisee. The wait and see Pharisee is the one that had all the right answers, but they would delay doing what was right because maybe God will have another reason that, you know, or another way that we should go about living this. They knew the right to do and they wouldn't do it immediately. There's the bruised Pharisee. This is one of my favorites because it's just funny. The bruised Pharisee is the one who wanted to prevent themselves as men at looking at women that they shouldn't be looking at that they were not married to. So they closed their eyes. Do you get where this is going? They're bruised because they walk into walls. The bruised Pharisee, the humpback Pharisee, is the one who's just walking around day in and day out. and you're like, oh, is something wrong with your back? No, I'm just in fearful reverence of God. And they would do this, you know, this hunched over look so that people would look and wonder and maybe even ask. They would bait them so they could say how righteous they were. The ever-reckoning Pharisee is the one, some of you that are accountants, you would probably find a way with this. And this is the person who is constantly counting all the good deeds that they've done. I mean, they are walking around with a notepad or their phone, and every time they remember a good deed they did, they're writing it down. And if you ask them, how many good deeds have you done in your lifetime, they probably would just give you a number. They wanted people to know how much they had done it. There's the fearful Pharisee, the one who made sure to be just quaking, physically quaking. And when you're like, are you cold? No, I'm just in fear of God. They would physically quake, again, to draw attention. And then the last one, the God-loving Pharisee, is one who would be very proud about the fact that they would say, well, I model Abraham in my faith and how I give. I'm just following Abraham's example. That's all I'm doing. So these were ways that the Pharisees themselves knew they were prone to being hypocritical, and yet Jesus had to point out they're being hypocritical. That doesn't happen to us, right? We don't read about some sort of sin or practice that we're supposed to do, and then we do the absolute opposite, right? We're all good in here. If any of us struggle with that, I'm sorry. You know, it says, you know, don't gossip, or it says don't, you know, desire what your neighbor has, and we're there doing it, and we know it. The Pharisees did the exact same thing. So before we say we are so much better than them, we're prone, especially those of us that are believers, we're prone to becoming exactly like them. So you may ask, what then are the symptoms of pretending? What are the symptoms of Pharisees pretending to be something that they were not for praise and such? There are three key ones that we see Jesus mentions. In verse 2, he says that they give, or they use giving as an excuse to be applauded. They use giving as an excuse to be applauded. And he says in verse 2, you know what? When you give, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do. Yep, we're going there. All right. So, this is Amazon Find if you need to get your kids up or your grandkids. So when I'm giving, I should not be, hey, everybody, going to give. Okay, I saw a few of you jump. You just thought that was going to be quiet, didn't you? I'm waking my kids up with this tomorrow for camp. Okay, you should not blow a trumpet to get attention to yourself. You should not ask the bank, do you have extra large checks? You know, like those ones that they use for giveaways. Or, wow, I'm really unloading my pocket right now. Okay? He's saying don't do it for applause. Just like with the Pharisees. If that's why you're doing it, you can have all the accolades. You can draw the attention. And that's as good as you're going to get it. And guess how long that lasts? Not real long. You may think it goes for a long time, but it doesn't. Second symptom of pretending, Jesus points out, is in verse 5. He says, they pray for attention. Not pray for, hey, people pay attention to me, although that's what they desired. They pray to get that attention of themselves. It says that Jesus said they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and street corners. Now, there were three times a day specifically that Jews were supposed to pray, 9, 12, and 3. This is why when you see Islam, who prays five times a day, this is borrowed from Judaism, this set time frame when you are supposed to pray, because Islam prays five times a day. Everybody knew when these times were. 9, 12, 3. Tomorrow, what time is it? 9, 12, 3. What about the next week? 9, 12, 3. Okay, everybody knew it. And so the way that Jesus seems to hint at this is because the times were known, he said that they love to stand and pray in the synagogues, but the second place, what is the second place? Street corners. Well, if they knew that they had to pray, why were they out on the street corner? Oh, wasn't that convenient of them to sort of time that, to be right in the center of town, downtown Everett at State Street, making sure that you're there and you're praying with hands lifted and you're doing it at the top of your lungs. Oh, look what time it is. I'm supposed to be praying here. They planned it out. They planned it out because they wanted to be seen. They wanted people to admire them and think, wow, they must be really holy. I wish I was like that. Now, when I was a student pastor, there's an event that goes on once a year, which I still highly, highly, highly encourage youth to be involved in. And it is called See You at the Pole. See You at the Pole, I think most of us are familiar with. If you aren't, it's a prayer event. I think it's like the third Thursday in September every year, something like that. Students are supposed to go to the flagpole of their school before school and pray. This is awesome. I highly recommended our students do it. But I'll say this from all the times that I would go there and meet with my students and let them pray. It was fun to watch them take leadership and to do it as everybody's coming to school to be seen. I had some students that got it, man. They knew it was a witness, and they were pouring their hearts out to the Lord for their school, that God would start a revival in their school, that God would use them, that they would not fall into temptation, all of that. I heard those great prayers. But I had the occasional student that was there that would be doing this during prayer. And then afterwards, I heard a couple of them be like, yeah, a couple of people saw us. We did good. Now, I love them, okay? I love students. You know that. That's my heart. But here's the thing. They stole the blessing of what it's supposed to be about by drawing attention to themselves. It became a, hey, look at us. And I had to talk to them. I, of course, didn't let that go without being nipped in the bud, to quote Barney Fife. I made sure to deal with it because I don't want them to do it for show. Let's let it be real. And they were praying for attention. They were praying for attention. The third symptom is fasting for admiration. They fasted for admiration. Jesus said in verse 16, they disfigured their faces that their fasting may be seen by others. So there they are like, oh, I'm so hungry. Walking around, you know, in the church potluck, you know, just walking around the table purely to pray for you. And they're just there and they're groaning and, oh, I'm so hungry. Once again, so people come up and be like, why are you so hungry? Why don't you get some food? Oh, I'm fasting. Again, I had a student that did this one day. I taught a lesson on fasting, and the next day literally went against everything that I taught, because that never happens in youth ministry or church when you teach something and it doesn't. Yeah. The kid's like walking around, I'm so hungry, and I had to pull him aside. I'm like, dude, if you're doing this for the Lord, stop. Stop. This isn't about gaining attention, because he was doing it for attention, and I had to nip that, and that was a lot of fun. So the thing with fasting with the Jewish culture is that the Pharisees fasted twice a week, Thursday and Monday, like clockwork. And yet it says here that they were once again fishing for praise, fishing for affirmation, and they acted in a hope to get this attention so that people would talk about how righteous they were. Now, possibly some of us may, you know, struggle with one of these three. But let's put this a little bit more in a modern context, because I believe Jesus is hitting on the heart of something more that easily creeps into us in 2026 as Christians. And I'm just going to give you some examples. If any of you squirm, I wasn't thinking of you specifically. I was literally thinking of stuff I've seen in my life or in others. Sometimes people will post something super spiritual on social media, fishing for praise. And I have seen some of them with a spiritual life that is totally the opposite of what they're posting. I have seen where a believer will make sure to verbally say, I'm standing for such and such. I stand for this. And they're just tooting that horn. You know, I'm not going to blow it again. But they're tooting the horn. Look at me. I'm a good person because I stand for the right things. That's called virtue signaling. I've seen where Christians get their name ensconced on a room, or expected, I should say, expect that they get their name slapped on a room because they gave a chunk of cash for it. And you better believe there better be some recognition for this. That has, oh my word, I've got stories about that, but I'll refrain. I have seen where we use Christianese around our lost friends to impress them with our Christian language and our Christian phrases. But you get away from those lost people, it's out the window. We do it to impress people. Or maybe we do that around other Christians, to impress them that we can say, some of my theological phrases. You got the hypostatic union. You got antinomianism. There's one to drop on some people. What is antinomianism? Look it up. You use these key phrases. You use these key phrases to draw attention to yourself. Or, let's see, what's some of the other ones I had? And this is one I want to be very careful with this. Again, it's for the sake of drawing attention to gain praise for yourself of how holy you are. Back when I was a high schooler in the 1990s, t-shirts came out called Living Epistles. Living Epistles were Christian t-shirts, and they were great. The problem is I saw a bunch of these on my youth group buddies who were totally not living for the Lord, weren't talking that way, weren't even pretending. But they would put it on so that they would have a better reputation. Sometimes we can trust on things we wear to fish for that praise. Wow, they must be really righteous. This is just the beginning of it. I think if we were to sit around and think of ways that we do something that, if we're doing it for the Lord, it's not a bad thing. And yeah, it may catch some attention, but if we're doing it to fish for praise, then it's not so good. The Pharisees really had two goals in mind. They wanted to impress others, but I also wonder if they were also trying to convince themselves about how good they were. Sometimes we fish for that praise from people, so we're like, oh, I am a good person. And doggone it, people like me. You fish for that stuff that people will give you what you're looking after to sort of convince yourself that you're a good person. The Pharisees may have been fishing for that themselves. But Jesus gives us strict directions. Instead of pretending, there's three things that we should do. And these are very clear for us. Whenever it comes to an act of showing our faith or living out our faith and doing things for Him, first off, in the case of these three disciplines, give secretly. We should give in secret. He says, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Is that psychologically possible? I don't know. I'm sure there's something out there. Wow, where did that check go? What did you do? You're talking to your hands like puppets. It's weird, but you get the idea. Jesus is making sort of a crazy idea, but his point is this, that it should be so secret that you forget you even did it, that a couple days later you're like, oh, that's right, I wrote the check. Instead of fishing for that praise, instead of tooting your own horn and getting your name slapped on something for the praise of you, wow, aren't they beneficial or generous? They must really care. We give without thought of opportunity of how it may benefit us. The second thing that Jesus says is we need to pray unnoticed. Yeah, there's a time for public prayer. Let me nip that in the bud. There's a time for us to get together in public prayer. It's wonderful, wonderful. But in this case, Jesus says, go into your room and shut the door and pray. I believe that public prayer, when we get together as a church and we pray publicly, should only be an echo of what we're already doing in our personal lives. Your personal life should just naturally bleed into this public prayer thing. If you don't have that private prayer life where you and the Lord are just spending time together in secret and so on, don't depend upon public prayer times to supplement your weak personal prayer life. You cannot depend on whether it's a prayer meeting or a prayer event we do here. We've done 24 hours of prayer. Or you go to a big prayer thing with a bunch of other believers. You cannot hope that somehow you met your quota, okay, for prayer. It's supplemented my life. That's like not eating for 3 weeks and then going to Shady Maple as though that's the norm for you, okay, for dietary. And then you just gorge on food and then you do 3 weeks again. Prayer is to be done privately. Unnoticed, I had a youth pastor that I really looked up to, and he wasn't doing this for praise. He was simply saying that the life of a youth pastor was to be important. He had in his garage like a curtain in the back corner, and he told his kids, whenever I go back there, don't bother me. And this was literally his prayer sheet, his corner of the garage, where he would pray because he wanted to have a spot that was devoted when he went, and he knew it was for prayer. And he could pray out loud and use this as his war room, if you will. The ladies just watched War Room recently. A place to pour out their heart before God. So pray unnoticed, not for praise. Don't use fancy words in prayer to try to impress people. And then third, fast covertly. Jesus says, You need to do this so that your fasting may not be seen by others. And then he talks, if you look at it, he talked about that in the phrase in his teaching there. And he says, anoint your head and wash your face. Well, what's he meaning with that? He's like, go about your day. Put on your deodorant, brush your teeth, get dressed, and go about your day. Don't do it fishing for praise. We need to fast covertly and find ways, and we should be fasting as a discipline, where we give up food for a little bit of time, and if you can't dietarily do it, giving up something of significance that you feel to devote time to prayer. But do so covertly, not telling everyone about it. The point this morning is that worship keeps your eyes up rather than looking around. Worship keeps our eyes up on the Lord. If we are genuinely worshiping, like in these three ways or any of the other acts that we do of faithfulness, our eyes have to be on who it's all about, our audience of one, and not looking to see who's looking. Not looking to get that praise, because as Jesus said, if that's your point, congratulations, you're going to get it. Enjoy it, because that's all you're getting. Not a reward from the Father in heaven. Keep your eyes up, not around. Human praise is always temporary, whereas God's rewards are eternal. So what is our homework then with this as we think about how we avoid Phariseeism in our life? Self-righteousness we talked about last week. This week us talking about being a pretender. First off, I think it's pretty easy. We keep our devotion discreet. We make sure that we are exercising our spiritual life discreetly. Yes, there are times that it will come out and people will see it. My concern is more for our motivation. If our motivation is to seek the praise of people, other believers, get them off our back, just like a Joan Crawford, except a spiritual version of that, then we're missing the point. Do it discreetly. Do it between you and the Lord. And do it with all your might. Commit the unseen to God and let him reward you, because you know he sees it all. And then secondly, check your motives. Check your motives. Why am I doing this? Ask yourself things about why am I doing this? Where am I doing this? What am I doing? Because if any answer in your heart stumbles over, I'm doing this to be closer and grow my relationship and my intimacy with God, then we're missing something, and we need to do a hard examination on why we're doing this. Is it guilt? Let me throw that one out there. Are we only doing it out of guilt so that people will not look down upon us? I know that there are mixed feelings on offering plates. I grew up in a church that passed an offering plate. And the reason that I have a conviction about why we don't pass the offering plate here is I saw, and I know from my own personal experience, that there were times that I gave because I didn't want anyone looking at me and saying they didn't give anything. And so, yeah, we could pass the plate. We'd probably be doing a little bit better financially as a church and making sure we could support ministries and such. But I know this. Those of you that are devoted to giving to God of what you have discreetly, guess what? We have an honest tithe here, because you're going to do it. You don't have to be told. And it goes to the work of the Lord here in changing lives for him. Check your motives. I leave you with this phrase that I saw another pastor recently say. He said, Christians are to be seen doing things, not doing things to be seen. There's a difference. Check our motives. Let's pray. God, I thank you for the example of the Pharisees, something for us to avoid, something that is very easy. I know in my life that I can sometimes feel a sense of compulsion that I have to do something, not because it's between me and you, but it's because of other eyes that are on me. Lord, for all of us that have struggled with that or are struggling with that, God, forgive us, because that just keeps our eyes on our fellow man and woman to give us praise that we're fishing for. God, I ask that you would break us of the spirit of pretending, that you would help us to get rid of the Phariseeism in our heart, and at the very least, Lord, to help us to be aware of where we struggle with Phariseeism. And so, Lord, take us out of here reflecting on our actions and recommitting a sense of worshiping you, because we want to worship you and not concern ourselves with the people around us. And so we ask all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. If you would like prayer, you can send your prayer request in to prayer@gfchurch.net, and we will pray for you. If you like this message, don't forget to subscribe on the podcast app, Google or Spotify. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to seeing you next week.